I am so glad you could join us. I'm your host, Mo Gaudat. This podcast is nothing more than a conversation between two good friends sharing inspiring life stories and perhaps some nuggets of wisdom along the way. This is your invitation to slow down with us. Welcome to Slow Mo.
Welcome back. I am stuck here in Helsinki talking to a wonderful person all the way from the other end of the world in Canada, who is, I think, a beautiful reminder of the joy I get from this podcast. So one of the things I truly love about Slow Mo is that it's that idea that I have total creative freedom because I don't monetize this. This is my way of giving some wisdom to the world. I can stumble upon someone on Instagram, find that they're incredibly wise, don't have to go to a producer, don't need to get approvals. I just text them and then here we are. So I did that around exactly 4 days ago. I was in Dubai airport flying over for my a small European tour. And, I think Instagram now really knows me. So it only shows me artificial intelligence, happiness, well-being, and love and romance. And it showed me an incredible video from a coach in Canada, Julian Dallas. And Julian, so wise. Honestly, I don't know if I should say this. I stalked her content, like really almost read all of it as my travel plans changed and I had more time. There is a level of honesty in what she speaks about that is truly refreshing, honestly, in a way. Openly discusses how feminism works for us or against us, how masculinity works for us or against us. Julian is a coach with the mission of helping sensitive, brilliant women build happy, healthy relationships with masculine men. And her story is a very interesting reflection of being informed about what she teaches because she wasn't always in this space. She started in a very, very different space. So my guest today, Julian Dallas, is going to take us through the journey of going through trauma to find healthy relationships between the feminine and the masculine. Julian, thank you so much. I'm actually really excited about this, serendipitous in many ways, but a very interesting conversation, I hope, for me. Starting from your story. So let me tell you what I found out so far. Okay, I'm sure there is more, but from what I read on your Instagram and the videos I watched, you were in the military coaching difficult cases, let's say. You were curvier than how you are today, where you are super fit, and you have changed, as you say, by actually finding a masculine man. I want to know those stories, if you're open to tell us about them.
Absolutely. So I was never in the military. My husband was. So that was my introduction to the military community, is just by proxy of being so deeply connected with someone in your life. You learn a lot about their story and the environments that they were in. So I personally was never in the military, but he served 8 years in the Canadian military. So that's how that journey started. And I appreciate saying that I was curvier than I am now. And I'm a firm believer that how we relate to one thing is how we relate to everything. And finding my husband, who is a very masculine man, was definitely a huge part of my journey to becoming whole, I would say. It wasn't the entire picture. I've always been a seeker of knowledge, a seeker of improvement, a seeker of well-being, and maybe even having a little bit of a traumatic background sort of propelled me in that direction, because the reality in which I was living from a day-to-day basis was not, it couldn't stay the same. So I was always a seeker, and a lot changed when I met my husband, certainly.
That's a very brave statement. I don't know if many modern women would be willing to openly say that, that a man has a positive impact. Oh man, no, that's a taboo statement. But I want to go back to the military first. Like, I think it's important. that people understand that background. So you were not in the military, but you coached the military, didn't you?
Yes. So I started doing trauma-informed work, and we can get into a little bit of what that means later if it's relevant. But I started doing this work on myself because of my relationship. So a lot of the issues that I talk about on my page were presented in my relationship. And there was so much conflict. There was a lot of come here, go away dynamics in my relationship, specifically with me, but it was also shown in my husband as well. And as I started to really heal and truly shift the way that I was showing up in the world, it wasn't a Band-Aid solution. It wasn't, you know, I was just had a different mindset. I was truly different in my body, the way I related to myself and the world. I noticed that there was a huge issue in the military community, specifically when they're transitioning out of military service, where they hit this wall where suddenly they don't understand who they are anymore. And that's felt on a really deep autonomic level. When I say autonomic level, I mean our autonomic nervous system. Mm. I tell people it's the same part of our nervous system that beats the heart, right? Mm. So it's really, really fundamental to who we are. And they feel this kind of stuckness and, more than anything else, a loneliness, like a pervasive loneliness. Again, specifically when they're transitioning out of the military, or maybe they've been transitioned for a long time and they had this expectation that, you know, they would start their life again and maybe they're going to start a business or they're going to do all of these things once they leave the military, and they have the opposite experience. They feel isolated. They feel alone. They don't have access to the full range of their human experience, good emotions, bad emotions, all of the above. And I was noticing, and maybe I was more curious in the beginning, to any type of parallel that might be playing out with what I had experienced in my own nervous system from my traumatic background and something that was being experienced. My husband was experiencing it, and I saw it in the military community. So that's how I kind of took a risk initially. I just started talking to the military community, and the feedback I was getting was honestly really humbling and overwhelming, that, you know, this is the things I were hearing were, this is exactly me. Like, how are you in my brain? I've never had someone articulate what I've experienced in this way before. Specifically that come here, go away pattern as well. Mm. So, and then I started taking a risk on coaching, and I had support to do so. I had my own trauma-informed coach at the time, and the results were phenomenal. I mean, it's truly like the key to unlocking, in my opinion, a huge chunk of human potential is understanding the nervous system, understanding trauma, and specifically how it affects our adult relationships and how it affects our nervous system. I think trauma can almost be a little bit of a buzzword today, and it gets thrown around a lot. And I find that there's a real practical application to the word that's missing. People don't actually understand, like, okay, if there's trauma in your background, what does that mean for you moving forward? If we're going to look at trauma, if we're going to heal trauma, rewire trauma, what does that actually mean, like in real life and reality? And why is it important to you? And at the end of the day, relationships, in my opinion, are the things that add the most value and the most meaning to our human experience. And so if there's conflict in relationships, or if there's, you know, a level of connection that people are desiring, but they just can't access, well, that's a very real practical application and a practical reason to work through some of these self-protective trauma responses that are embedded in the nervous system. So when you start to link those two together, the stuckness that people are feeling on a day-to-day basis and what they're desiring in their relationships, and that sort of mystery zone of, well, how do I get from here to here? And then you start talking about trauma and the nervous system, and you can bridge that gap for them. I think it's a huge relief for people knowing that they're not broken, that they do make sense. When I say that to people, they, you know, sometimes if I'm on a Zoom call with them, their shoulders just drop back. What do you mean it makes sense? Oh my gosh. Like, I've been thinking I'm broken, like, this whole time.
I thought I was a big mess. Yeah.
Yeah. And that becomes a part of their identity, right? Mm. Which just kind of fuels that isolation and loneliness even more, because they start to develop shame around their feelings of loneliness and their feelings of stuckness. And when we feel shame, we tend to self-isolate even more, right? And it can kind of become this, like, people just become locked away in their own kind of personal hells, so to speak. So I think it's a huge relief for people when they, you know, and it's not just me saying that they make sense, right? There's a roadmap. There's, you know, science is telling you that you make sense. It's a huge relief.
Would you be open to tell me a bit about your own traumas?
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, I tell people never to compare their trauma to other people, but there was no severe abuse that had happened to me. I would say that it was a combination of being a very sensitive child. I was, and I still am, a sensitive woman today, but I was extremely sensitive as a child. And I would say that the most important thing that affected me was my parents' relationship and their dynamic with each other. And there was a lot of kind of this come here, go away pattern. And there was a lot of emotional instability. There was a lot of, and this happens in a lot of people that I work with as well. I see it in the relationships, but an inability really to take responsibility for their own emotions, for their own human experience. And I think a lot of people can relate that when that happens, when you have children, especially if you have sensitive children, a lot of that gets projected onto the children, right? There's expectations that get projected on, or sometimes even the overt or subvert expectation to not feel the way that you feel, or to not, you know, that there's some parts of you that are good and some parts of you that are bad, and really a lot of mixed messages, because that's what happens when adults feel unsafe with their own human experience. They feel unsafe with their own emotional regulation. And there was a lot of codependency with my parents, without saying, you know, spilling their dirty laundry on the internet. A lot of that got projected onto me. And so as I grew older and became an adult myself, there was a lot of, I was expecting mixed messages from life. So I developed a very strong come here, go away pattern, not just in how I related to my romantic partnerships, but to everything in life, with my money, with my well-being, with anything that I was trying to be consistent with. I wanted connection so deeply, but at the same time, connection was confusing, and sometimes it was even painful. So I think the wires got crossed a little bit there. So that's how that kind of come here, go away pattern tends to develop. Is it makes sense, because we want connection, but connection historically has also felt really unsafe. And so we draw things in, we draw people in, and then when we have what we want, oof, we push it away. So that's the pattern that really played out in my life. Was it was very hard for me to stay consistent with things. It was very hard for me to receive anything, really. I could receive it for a little bit, but then it'd be overwhelming for my system and I'd have to push it away. And I navigated life that way. I made it work, because humans are resilient. We do what we can to get by. But at a certain point, especially when I met my husband, it just wasn't working anymore. I deeply wanted to be in a relationship with this man. I deeply respected this man. And I was noticing that these patterns that, to be quite honest, I was getting away with for a really long time, it wasn't working in that relationship anymore. And I knew that if I wanted to stay consistent, if I wanted this to work, I was going to have to change, and change on a fundamental level that I didn't really understand at the time, because I didn't know that these patterns were wired into my attachment system. I didn't know that this is, you know, that way of, I didn't even have words to describe it at the time, but I didn't realize that that was learned at a very young age, on that autonomic level.
I mean, it's quite courageous to say what you just said, that you observe that you want to be in a relationship with someone, and your response to that is, I need to change. Obviously, more frequently, what happens is, I need to be in a relationship with someone and they need to change. What brings about a difference in perspective in that way?
Well, in many ways, he was my dream guy.
Oh, man, is he listening? Hey, lucky man. What's your husband's name?
His name is Warren.
Warren, you lucky bastard. Seriously? And she's still saying that. How many years together?
It was still a relatively new relationship. So we've been together for 4 years.
You
so
lucky,
long enough
lucky,
to be well
lucky
past
man.
The honeymoon phase, but...
Yeah. Okay.
It's so funny because he's a very private guy. Uh-huh. And he told me before, he knew I would be talking about him and he knew I would be talking about the relationship. So he just puts his head down and he's like, do what you got to do. And he has a lot of respect for this work as well. Like he's seen the benefit of it in our relationship.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, private or not, I'm an ultimate introvert, but to feel that a woman feels that way about you is actually quite rewarding. It's quite a dream, I think, for most men, even the most masculine, the most accomplished, the most secure. It's that one special woman that if you can feel that from her, it makes a very big difference. So you were saying in many ways he was your dream man, and so you could still change him. Isn't that what's common? It's like, yeah, he's my dream man, but he's not the perfect fit. Let him work.
Well, it's so funny how this plays out. I think in the beginning, I did probably try to change him a little bit, but it was quite unexpected because I hadn't dated a lot of masculine men before that point. And I think that's probably has to do with culture in a big way. But I would say things to him. Well, I'll give an example. So before I met him, I had this idea that I wanted to be polyamorous. And I think it really came from a place of fear, a place of perhaps even a little bit of that come here, go away pattern that maybe I didn't fully trust myself to be consistent with one person. But I had mentioned that to him. And by mentioning it, I kind of, you know, I had a little bit of sass in me. And I said, you know, I think I want to be polyamorous. And this is about a month after dating. And he just looked at me and he said, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, I think I want to be with like lots of different people and see how that goes. And he just very firmly looked me in the eye and he said, okay, well, you can do that, but you're not going to do that with me. If you want to be with me, we're going to be exclusive. And just that directness and that firmness and that leadership, you know, it was true leadership because he wasn't angry. He didn't placate me. He didn't say, oh, well, maybe we can make that work. He was very clear that if I wanted to be with him, that wasn't an option. End of story. And I think some women might see that as problematic, but actually in the moment, that was just complete relief to my system because I was like, oh, I don't think I want that either. But I never felt safe with a man that, you know, he was firm enough in his own masculinity to stand up for what he believed in. And he wasn't afraid of offending me. He wasn't afraid of losing me. Because if I was firm in that, I could have very easily said, okay, well, I'll see you later then. But what I actually wanted was him. And I think it's very common for feminine women to test the men in their lives.
I was going to say, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a good thing, but it's very common and it's probably quite natural as well. And just having him stand up for what he believed in that way, I realized that that's what I wanted. And I was going to have to get on board with that. It wasn't smooth sailing from that point on, but that's just an example to, you know, I think I would have probably lost my attraction to him if I could change him. Which, that's not what I wanted, right?
I like him already. In a very interesting way, I want to get into the depths of that because you're absolutely right. A feminine woman will try. So let's go into definitions. You use feminine woman and masculine man. What's a feminine woman? What's a masculine man?
Well, I see it more on a sliding scale, right? It's not boxes that I think people should try to fit themselves into. I see that a lot, especially in the online space, of people trying to really define and place themselves in a camp of what exactly is a feminine woman and who am I, or what is a masculine man and who am I? And I see it more a sliding scale of traits. Feminine energy, for example, is more receptive, more open, softer. It's all about receiving. It's all about nurturance. Masculinity, on the other hand, is all about assertiveness, leadership, moving forward, focus, right? Masculine energy tends to focus a lot more. Feminine energy tends to, I mean, we can just look at the male and female brain, right? Men have the box of no thought that they can magically occupy, and women tend to be, you know, thinking about many things at once and are just completely perplexed that the box of no thought is actually a thing. I mean, that's the masculine and feminine brain, but these are just really traits on a sliding scale that can be expressed or hidden, really. And yeah. I think the most important thing is for individuals to find out what feels most authentic for them. And I think a lot of men and women are miserable because culture is telling them a different story of how they should be. And it's actually quite against their nature. And so they try to fit in, they try to put themselves in a box, and they inevitably become quite miserable and often depressed. So does that answer your question? Is that a...
That's a great answer to the question. That is a brilliant answer. This is, so I think from this we can build on so much, but I've always advocated the idea that there is no 100% masculine, no 100% feminine. It's, you know, I don't think such a being ever existed. Feminine and masculine are attributes by which we navigate life, right? Mm. And I think they're almost entirely polar opposites. So you take receptive on one side and, you know, sort of doing or impacting or pushing on the other side. You take nurturing on one side and protective on the other side, and so on, right? Different approaches to everything. And I think everything to thrive needs a bit of both, right? The gold that you just said is that we tend to be boxed away from our nature. So, you know, nobody is 100% feminine or nobody is 100% masculine, but it seems that society keeps pushing us to the middle, telling men, don't be masculine, or telling the masculine, by the way, the masculine could be a woman in a, you know, a same-sex couple relationship who is on the masculine side of the relationship. We just tell everyone, don't be too manly, don't be too masculine. That's aggressive, that's violent, that's too pushy, that is too controlling. And we tell, you know, the feminine side, don't be too feminine. You know, that's soft, it's really not very fit for society, it's a little unpredictable sometimes. Just come to the middle. Everyone come to the middle. And I would say openly, I never had a relationship in my life ever. I would say that openly. Even when I dated the most feminine women who were actually true to their spectrum. I like a woman who is, I think, very much on the masculine spectrum in my relationships, even though in my typical approach to life, I'm a lot more balanced. But in my relationship, I'd be very masculine. And I want my woman to be hyper feminine. I want her femininity to ooze out of her in every possible way, including some of the things that confuse men. I love the paradoxical thinking. I love that. I really adore the idea of a woman being able to hold two opposite concepts in her heart and mind at the same time. I love that moment when she looks at me and she says, I hate you, but I still want to kiss you. I love that, right? To me, this is brilliant. Right. And I think there has never been a relationship in my life where giving her the space where she can actually express her nature made her more feminine, if you know what I mean. So it seems that it's not just society, as we get into relationships, we shackle ourselves away from being who we truly are because we're afraid to be judged. We're afraid to be too much. We're afraid to be misunderstood by the other side, which obviously is the opposite, right? But it seems in your experience that this was actually an eye-opener, that because he's the opposite, that sort of allowed you to be your natures a little more.
Yeah, it was interesting because in theory, I think before experiencing that in my nervous system as a feminine woman, I might not have believed it.
Mm.
Because there's a lot of things that we still work through sometimes and still struggle with. And I think that's probably true for every long-term masculine-feminine relationship. The differences in being at polar ends of the spectrum felt, I was like, this can't be right. I mean, we are so different because, like you said, there really is this push, a very aggressive push to try to erase our differences as if they don't exist. And it's like a fundamental part of reality. And I think most people see that and they feel that and they go, this doesn't feel right. But then our biological impulse to be a part of society and not be outcast, right? Not be literally outcast in society and shamed and shunned away. That overrides us, overrides people in general. And then they say, okay, well, maybe there is some truth to this. Maybe I am supposed to be more feminine, or maybe I am supposed to be more masculine. And like I said, they become quite depressed. But in my relationship, what had happened is despite us being very different in how we think, feel, behave, I mean, we are very different on multiple different levels. There were things in me that were truly unlocked through experiencing that I had to experience. I actually had to be in a relationship with him in order to feel that. It's not something that happened conceptually. Suddenly, I felt, well, actually, here's another example. I didn't think I wanted kids before meeting my husband. And it was within a month and a half where I asked him, I was like, do you want kids? And I remember it came out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. And I thought, whoa, what is happening here? And he just looked at me, he said, yeah. Like, it's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay. And just something clicked in my biology that, you know, conceptually that didn't make any sense to me. Like, why suddenly now, you know, I was so certain that I didn't want kids. And now suddenly it's the only thing I can think about. And that was very real safety that was unlocked in my feminine being, that I needed a man like that in my life in order to feel safe moving forward, raising children, because we're designed to complement each other. The feminine and the masculine were, like you said, it's polar opposites, but together it creates a union and it creates a sense of completeness, right? If you have two things that are exactly the same, you end up getting in kind of a vacuum, right? It's like, can't really experience life in the same way because you're thinking the same, you're feeling the same, and so you don't grow. But when a masculine being and a feminine being come together and they commit, the opportunity for growth is unparalleled. And it's my opinion that it's supposed to be this way, not just to raise children, but I mean, to raise children is a big commitment and it really calls people into a higher level of responsibility. It really calls them into a higher level of personal growth and development. And you need to have that contrast. And I felt that with my partner, right? His steadfastness, his leadership, his confidence in what he believed in, his thoughts and opinions. Something that I see a lot with men, and I don't think they really want to be this way because it seems to make them feel kind of bad about themselves, but they feel pushed into a corner where the only option they have is to placate the women in their lives, right? To just tell them whatever it is that they want to hear because they don't want
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Because your home is supposed to be your safe haven, right? Men go out in the world and like another thing, the pressure on a man to be a real man. I mean, you hear that everywhere, right? The world is a harsh place for men. And I feel like that conversation is not had enough. It's not to say that women don't have their challenges. You know, there's human suffering across the board. But the world is a harsh place for men. Nobody cares about men's feelings, especially in the workplace.
Yeah.
Right?
Anywhere. Let's just put it, bluntly. Yeah, it's like men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Big boys don't cry.
It's totally normal in masculine communities, right? And even that gets a lot of hate, right? People look at that and they go, that's not right. They should be more in touch with their emotions. They should be able to express their emotions. But historically throughout time, it's not the way men tend to, I mean, you still need to know what you're feeling, right? It's not healthy to suppress it. But at least this is what I've observed, that you know, men amongst men, it's not really, they don't get a lot of relief from talking too much about their emotions. Whereas women, we get a lot of relief when we talk about our emotions. Our brain is wired for oxytocin. We feel more bonded. We feel connected. And we gain a lot of clarity about how we're feeling when we talk about our emotions. But men, in my experience, they don't tend to have the same level of relief. Oftentimes it can make them feel a little bit more vulnerable than they're willing to feel. And sometimes that being too vulnerable doesn't help them go back out in the world in that harsh environment, because the world is harsh for men.
I mean, in a very interesting way, when you really think about it, one of the biggest complaints that women would have in a relationship is he's not emotionally available. When, you know, we take a child from age 7 and we say, boys don't cry, and, you know, you shouldn't be emotionally available, in a very interesting way, we're almost instructing them that to succeed in the world, emotions shouldn't be a big, you know, factor affecting your decisions and your behavior and your performance. And it's quite interesting, because if you go back to the caveman years, you know, it was extremely useful for the females sitting behind in the cave to discuss and chat and communicate and connect in so many ways to make sure that this is a nurturing environment for everyone. While, you know, sharing your emotions in the wild while there is a tiger chasing you was going to be problematic. You know, it's like the one male that would sit in the corner and say, guys, I'm really so tired, can we sit down now? It's probably going to be, you know, either beaten or really, really bullied. So, you know, it's a very interesting natural side of us. But the subtlety, and I really love how you look at it, is that I actually want to ask you exactly, how do you find that line? Because there is a line of what you call leadership that many of our feminine beings would see as control. There is a line in terms of responsibility, for example, that many of our feminine being will consider belittling their ability to make their own choices or decisions. Is that very fine line? And at the same time, I'll take it the opposite way, you know, you being the feminine being in this conversation and I'm being the masculine being in this conversation. You know, interestingly, there is a line of, you know, being playful or being nurturing or being wild, which are all characters of the feminine, if you want, beyond which the masculine would go like, oh, hold on, you know, that's a little too much for me. So how do we show up in a way that is fit for our selected partner?
Is your question specifically in regards to how men can show up in their relationship?
You're the feminine being in this, so talk about this from how men should show up.
I love it. I love the assertiveness there. So I'll talk again about my relationship as an example for this. So I have my own business. I'm a very independent person in that way. I have a lot of my own ideas. I'm a very strong, passionate person. Like I said, I'm very sensitive, so I have big, big emotional ranges. And I'm definitely not someone who, I certainly don't like to be told what to do. And I would say that's not how leadership plays out in our relationship. So going back to, you know, men in modern day culture who tend to feel like the only option they have is to placate their partners, that's something that Warren doesn't do. I mean, it's actually happened at different points in our relationship. And when it does, the relationship starts to become chaotic very quickly. So there's been points where I've pushed him into that spot where he feels like, oh, there's, you know, doesn't matter what I say, it's not going to be the right thing right now. So I'm just going to shut my mouth, right? Which is, it's painful. And ironically, it's not what most women want in their relationship, right? So, and then I'll speak for myself, but there's like a nagging that can come out there. Like, how come you don't talk to me? And in his head, he's thinking, well, you make it really, really hard to talk to you because I can't get it right.
Yeah. So the analytical masculine brain will always sort of go through all possible scenarios of what can I say to make the situation better, because the masculine is motivated by doing an achievement. It's not just sharing my feelings. Every time I will think about what I want to say to my woman, I will think about what impact that has on my woman. And often, if the situation is emotional, this may mean that the only real answer is to shut the F up, honestly. because, you know, anything I would say would trigger an unexpected emotion. And so, you know, I tend not to do that at all in my relationships. I'm actually quite, I'm old and I've seen enough of life to actually get her to speak more. But it is a very common response. And earlier in my relationships, you know, even in my wonderful marriage for such a long time, it was the only logical way, because, you know, when you solve point A with a specific response, you're messing up point B. And as you try to fix B, D goes up, you know, down a hill somewhere. And, you know, it's just very, very complicated when the situation is emotional.
And then your desire as the masculine partner to find a solution and to fix the problem, the percentage that you'll be able to do that effectively starts to go down and down and down. Exactly. and down. Yeah. And then men will start to feel inadequate and that they're not capable. And so, yeah, there's stonewalling that can happen of just like, okay, well, I'm going to stop trying because mm-hmm. I don't want to continue to feel like a failure here, because that's not good for me. That's not good for you. Right. That's, you know, women are typically terrified of feeling unloved or being unloved. Right. That's like the secret wound that women have, is that they're secretly unlovable. And men have the secret fear that they're not capable, that they can't do it. Right. They don't have what it takes. And I think if women understood that a little bit more, there would probably be like having a little bit more compassion for, you know, that men really, really want to get it right. And if they don't, if you don't give them avenues to get it right, they're going to stop trying.
One of your brilliant posts, I really loved that one, was, so basically you spoke about respect and how men want to feel appreciated. And this is their number one priority. And that women would tend to give, but give what the man doesn't want at all, right? And then they would wonder why the man is not appreciating all the giving, when the man wants a very different thing. Talk to me a little more about that in your experience and in general.
Well, I would say that she's not so much perplexed that he's not appreciating it. The problem with that type of giving that women tend to do is they have a secret hope that by her giving those things, he's going to feel obliged to then give those same things back to her. Mm-hmm. So underlying that motive is actually that she wants those things so badly. She wants the love. She wants the affection. She wants to feel deeply seen and cared for. She wants her husband or her partner to plan things, to think about her, to want to help, right? To really be involved. And if she feels like she's not getting that, and especially if she has childhood trauma where she really didn't get any of that, right? Where there's maybe some abandonment wounds, or she got her needs met consistently by her primary caregivers, but not reliably. And so she learned to be sort of anxious about getting her needs met. And maybe she's learned at a really young age that the only way to make sure that she's taken care of is to make sure that everyone around her is as happy as, you know, mm-hmm. taken care of as possible. Mm-hmm. And again, this makes sense. It just tends to really not work in a relationship with an adult masculine man. Because like you said, it's the last thing that he wants. He doesn't want to feel nurtured. He doesn't want to, you know, to a certain extent, he doesn't want to feel babied. He doesn't want
to feel mothered.
Mothered, yes.
Different than nurtured.
Right. Thank you for that. Yes.
Yeah. I'm the masculine side here. So I'm representing our viewpoints in this conversation. So mothered is very different. Mothers, you know, I love to be nurtured. And I have to say openly that the more masculine you are as a man, the more you need that nurture, because you can't produce it from within you. Mm-hmm. Nurturing is such a feminine quality, right? And I think the idea is there's a difference between nurtured and mothered. It's quite interesting.
The language is actually really important there.
One of my typical examples is, you know, how complex my life is. My life is so complex, it's almost impossible to explain. I have a million and a half parameters in every decision that I make about every minute that I dedicate in the day to my mission. I have contacts with tens of thousands of people on a weekly basis. Right. And it is so complex that for me to explain it to a woman in my life, whether it's a friend or a partner or a lover or a, you know, or my mother even, okay, would take me around 12 hours to try and explain all of the complexity through which I have to make a decision, right? Mothering is for a woman to come into my life and say, look, you're not doing this right. The way to do the way to do it is to take care of yourself. And to take care of yourself, you need to eat quinoa and do this and do that, right?
Oh my gosh, what a the example that you just gave there is so real.
100%, very repetitive experience with a feminine woman in my life, right? The nurturing, on the other hand, is the tenderness, is the love, is to complement the drainage that I feel because of the pressures that I get, okay? Which doesn't include the motherly intervention at all.
It's like nothing.
And interestingly, when you truly understand the feminine and the needs of the feminine, isn't that what she needs when she's in a vulnerable situation, right? She doesn't want to be lectured. She doesn't want to be corrected. She doesn't want to be told that she needs to do something differently. And I think that disparity is quite interesting, actually, when we give something that is not needed. I think that's really the trick. And then expect to be paid back and rewarded for giving what is not needed.
Right, right. And there's actually a hidden desperation. And even, like, I don't think women are doing this with any, you know, malicious intent at
all.
Absolutely
not.
There can be a little bit of a manipulative thread behind it, because they actually want to get something from their giving. Right. It's like, if I just dump all of this caring and this mothering into him, maybe he'll get the hint and he'll start doing it back to me. And to a masculine man, these are the things that I hear over and over and over again. That's like the most crazy thing on the planet, because it's that's the last thing that they want. Right. And then generally, the woman feels exhausted. She feels even more unloved because her strategy is not working, right? So she's kind of telling herself this narrative that if he really cares about me, he'll get these cues of my giving and he'll give me the same things back. And so naturally, he doesn't, because he just wants to get away from that mothering. He wants to feel like a man. He doesn't want to feel like a baby. So he's like, hey, can you just give me some space, please? And that clashes with the narrative that she's telling herself internally, that if he loves me, he will do this. And so then she really starts to fall apart, right? Oh my gosh, you don't love me. You don't see, you don't care about me because you're not doing this and this and this. And then in a relationship, both couples get to a standstill where they just don't know what to do anymore, because they're like on other opposite ends of an ocean almost. And they feel so misunderstood. They feel so hurt, right? Because the woman feels like she's giving so much and getting so little, and she just feels so unloved. And the masculine partner feels like she's not respecting his capability to navigate life on his own. And so he's feeling terribly unloved and probably depressed because he's not feeling respected in his relationship. And he wants his relationship to be harmonious and deeply connected, just like women do. And that's honestly the place that people get to when they come to work with me, is because they're like, okay, what the heck is going on? Because the strategies that I know how to employ here are not working. And so similar to what I started to learn when I met my masculine partner is, okay, maybe changing him is not the avenue here. Maybe there's something that I need to shift in my relationship with myself and how I relate to my own feminine energy, how I take care of myself first. And then, because women can give in a relationship, of course, but it's often this giving back, right? It's giving from an overflow. It's giving from a place of abundance and appreciation, instead of this sneaky, manipulative giving of, I'm already tired and I'm going to do this for you. And then if you don't get the cue in a week from now, I'm going to, you know, it's going to be World War III. So, which is very real. I mean, I'm sure most people, a lot of people listening can relate to that in
100%.
Some way.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So let me summarize this in a minute and then ask you the key question. So the summary here is that giving what you want to be given back might have zero value to your partner. Okay. If your masculine partner wants respect and you want love, giving him love is not going to feel like he's been given anything. Only when you give him respect will he feel that he's been given. If he gives you back respect, you're not going to feel anything. Of course, we all need respect, but what you need is to feel loved and safe, right? And so a very, very interesting place where the relationship breaks is when you give what you want to be receiving, expecting that it has value to the other side. When actually the easiest way, in my view, is to actually ask the other side what has value to do. So when someone comes to you at this stage, I mean, the typical masculine, again, I'm representing the masculine side here, is, you know, that my typical masculine friend or someone who asks for my help will say, but I've solved her problem. You know, she was telling me that something is bothering her, and I gave her the solution. It's a very easy solution. It would take away all of the problems, take away all of the illusion, you know, emotions. And I'm like, idiot, who told you she wants to solve the problem at all? Right? She only wants to feel that she has you, that she can go to and share and feel seen and feel loved and feel hugged. And she knows that the problem is easy. She knows that she can solve it, but she wants to share, right? So you giving her all the solutions in the world is not going to make her feel given anything. As a matter of fact, it's going to frustrate her. So how do you tell someone, how do you explain to someone when they get to the point of giving up, you know, this is not working, I'm doing all I can, and it's just not, you know, there is no response.
Well, the first thing, and I work with a lot of women now. So when I first started, I worked in the military community, I worked with a lot of men. So it's a different approach. And I always start with the individual, right? Especially when someone comes to me and they have a relationship dynamic that they want to fix. There's often, especially with women, they'll often tell me a lot about their partner. Right? Like, oh, well, he's doing this and I try to do this, but then he responds like this and I try to do. And the first thing we do is bring back the focus on her.
Beautiful.
Because what ends up happening is with this kind of desperate overgiving, there's usually a sort of self-abandonment that happens within the woman. Right? And she might have, again, it makes sense for a lot of people because she may have learned to do that because she needed to do that in order to survive at some point in her early childhood, right? So it's very self-protective. It's just not working anymore. Mm-hmm. So when she's been doing this pattern for so long that from a nervous system perspective, it actually feels quite threatening for her to focus on herself because she may have a lot of loneliness. She may have a lot of fear, some women describe it as like a black hole within themselves that they don't even want to look at. And they get a lot of instant relief when they focus on their partner because that's what they've always done. That's how they've learned to survive. And it's worked for them. So it's not working anymore. And so creating an environment of safety and co-regulation with another woman who's traversed that within herself and can kind of be that proverbial, like holding the hand out, so to speak, of, you know, I know this feels really unsafe for you to look within, but you can totally do it. And let's do it one step at a time. So it's reorienting her, that mothering nature, and starting to give that to herself so that she's not completely reliant on receiving it from her masculine partner first. And it's not to say that there's no expectation that she should receive nothing in her relationship. Like, of course, like both parties need to be responsible for how they show up in the relationship and how they choose to be with each other. And both parties need to be 100% in, not 50-50, 100% in. But if she's completely, completely reliant and desperate to get those needs met first from her partner, now we've created a black hole, right? Because the more he pulls away, the more desperate she's going to be to mother him with that, again, that unconscious and slightly manipulative expectation that that's the only way she can get her needs met is through him. Because when she's tried to do that herself, there's a sense of panic that comes up. And this is, you know, we see this a lot with childhood trauma or emotional trauma. It's very common with abandonment trauma. But I would say you don't have to be traumatized or to have significant trauma in your life to be able to identify with that feeling, you know, pretty deeply. Because how we relate to one thing is how we relate to everything. And it's very vulnerable to take full responsibility of how you are in the world.
I love this comment so much. Can you expand on this? How we relate to one thing is how we relate to everything.
Yeah, well, we're social creatures, right? And connection is a biological imperative, meaning we need connection in order to grow our brain. You know, that's how our species has evolved and survived. It's not optional. We are not lone rangers. I mean, there's some psychopaths out there that might actually, truly, they can be on their own. But as a species, we need connection. And so our brains are wired to experience the world through the connections that we've received from our primary caregivers. And once this happens very early, before the age of 3, and our brain and our nervous system does this so we can anticipate and conserve energy and expect, like, okay, well, this is how I'm going to reliably get that connection or not. And so that pattern of relating tends to follow us throughout our entire lives and typically really shows its head when we are in romantic relationships with other people, because since our parents, our romantic partnerships are probably the most important and deep relationships that we have, right? The relationships with our parents are very fundamental in shaping and molding who we are, and same with who we choose as a romantic partner. So the patterns of relating that we learned to anticipate in early childhood, we experience the world through that same lens. So how we, like I said in the beginning, how we relate to our money, how we relate to our sense of self, how we relate to, I mean, truly just life itself, like how we experience living is through this lens of the reliability of connection at an early age. So it's when I say that these patterns are really fundamental and core to how we be, like it is deep. Some people will describe it when they come to me and they're kind of describing the problems and how it feels. They'll say, you know, the stuckness that I'm experiencing in every area of my life, it feels biological. It doesn't matter how much mindset work I do. Like, it feels like this is who I am. I don't know that there's any other way of being. And so it takes a lot of responsibility, a lot of vulnerability to go to the core of who you are, of the core of how you experience life, and take a risk in the world that there might be a better way. Because essentially our nervous system, its only job is to keep us alive, right? And predictability and familiarity, the patterns that we know, even if they're really painful, even if they're really destructive, they are familiar and they haven't killed you yet. So from that autonomic perspective, let's keep it going, because we don't know what's around the corner, right? We don't know, again, caveman times, if we're in a new area, new territory, we don't know where the predators are. You know, we don't know if there's a cave bear, or, you know, that's why we never went out at night, right? That's why, you know, we are out during the day and then we come back in at night and rely on fire to see, because the dark, the unknown, could mean potentially death. And so when we're rewiring these patterns, they're embedded in your autonomic nervous system. So there, when you try to change them, there can be a big sense of threat that comes up in the body, a big sense of like, whoa, 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 whoa. We've been doing this for, you know, however old you are. I'm 32. So we've been doing this for 32 years. Like, what do you mean you're suddenly going to change now? What if that's worse? What if that gets you hurt? What if this new path you're going to take, even if it initially is better, what if the other shoe is going to drop later on? It's better to stay in what we know. It's better to stay in what's familiar, even if it's painful. And so it takes a lot of vulnerability to take responsibility for that and make a courageous choice anyways, despite that response.
That is so precious what you just shared. I think this truly is the first step of ever changing, right? It is to realize that there are other ways to stay safe, but that this way is actually not where you should be at all. And I think that takes me to my next point. Then the problem is, even if when we get to that point, Julianne, I think what ends up happening is that we are so brainwashed by endless messages from all sides. And, you know, just to give some of our listeners some ammunition to curse me, feminism, for example, right? So modern feminism seems to almost violently block some of those instinctive needs to change. They'll tell you, you know, they'll tell you, no, don't go there. And I'll be very blunt about this. Not every masculine man is a good man or a real man, right? Not every man that you fall in love with is going to be reliable and predictable and, you know, and over the long term available, right? And I think that there is that whole concept of, in Arabic, we have this proverb, which is very, I find very funny, which is, you know, if soup hurts you because it's too hot, you start to blow at yogurt before you eat it. And I think, you know, this is exactly what most of my very feminine friends would do. By the way, feminine women friends or gay men friends or, you know, feminine same-sex coupled women and so on and so forth, the feminine side starts to fear the masculine, right? And then feminism starts to say, yeah, we need to be strong. We need to be independent. Fuck them. You know, we don't want any of them in our life. We don't want to rely on them in any way. We just want to be independent, which means we ourselves have to be a little more masculine just to fill the gap. And that sort of brainwash is, I don't think the market is short of any stupid advice. I think we're flooded with advice that could kill us. So what's your position on all of that?
Well, first of all, I think I really liked what you said, that not every man is a good man, right? And this is true across the board. And it goes back to people wanting to, you know, position themselves in camps, right? Of like, everyone is a human being at the end of the day. And whether or not they're a woman, a man, a feminine energy, masculine energy, whatever, you have to take the individual into account, right? And that's true for every relationship, because Warren is not just a masculine man. He's a human being. I am not just a feminine woman. I'm also a human being. And there's complexities and nuances to all of that. So I think it's really important what you said there, that yes, you know, there's some pretty nasty women out there and there's some pretty nasty men out there, and there's no shortage of them. Yes. I think it's so important, because people confuse, you know, they think being for men or being for women means that we're saying all men are, you know, are heroes and all women are angels. Goddesses, and that's certainly not the case, right? Because we're human beings. But I think, you know, being feminine, to that receptive quality, and even if we go back to the biology of raising children, you know, giving birth to children, even being pregnant, especially the birthing process, it's very vulnerable. So embracing our feminine energy is very vulnerable. It's very tender. It's very susceptible to wounding. This is just true. And because of that, women can be very quick to close off their hearts, right? And one of the biggest things that the most painful thing that I think feminism has done to women is to teach them that it's more valuable to be like a man. And all that does is just make women feel ashamed of that innate vulnerability 100%. that they have.
Yeah.
And so they're already maybe guarding their heart with the people that they love, and especially their masculine men. And it's already a practice to continue to open their hearts. And then they have the culture telling them that actually you should try to be like a man. It is bad. It's bad to be hurt. It's bad to be vulnerable. It's bad to open up your heart. It's bad to want a man. Gosh, never want a man because he could hurt you. Right. So never truly need a man, especially because you could get hurt. And so there's this like weird collective shame that starts to happen around like the beauty in the softness of being a feminine person, a feminine woman, a feminine being. Like, it's such a beautiful, tender thing. And you had mentioned earlier in our conversation that, you know, men can't give them that to themselves typically, right? Like, it is such a unique and wonderful, precious thing.
It's a miracle. I will tell you, hands down, it's an absolute miracle for a masculine man that suddenly sees it, right? not as troublesome, not as an obstacle on the way of carrying another 7 kilograms on his back and move it to the kitchen, but rather right. as for the beauty of what it is. It's an absolute miracle.
Absolutely. And I mean, both men and women are able to appreciate beauty, but I had said before too, that the world is a really harsh place for men, and the world of men is a harsh place. I think women don't give enough credit. Like, it really, I don't know if you want to be a man. Like, it's pretty harsh. It's pretty intense. And like, even just a woman, like, appreciating the smell of a flower, or her ability to go slower, or her ability to just appreciate the day to day, and to, you know, love, just be a stand for all things tender and beautiful and vulnerable. That's like such a relief for men, right? It's like, oh my gosh, like, the world is so harsh. Thank gosh, there's this soft energy to balance it out. If there was no women, if there was no feminine energy in the world, men would just be killing each other all the time.
I always say that. No, it's not only that. We would have never been inspired to build anything at all. Like, you know, I mean, I will say this openly. I wanted to be a carpenter my whole life, right? Growing up, I still am a very, very good carpenter, and I love it. I love that life in wood, to the point that I graduated top of my class, got like a zillion job offers. And I said, no, I'm just going to start a carpentry workshop until it was time to go and propose and marry my wife. And I simply just started everything that you know about me, from my technology career to my books, to everything that I've ever done, was because of that shift. There was a reason in my life to shift, right? Otherwise, you know, McDonald's, and, you know, without feminine energy in my life, the word quinoa would have never come up. And then, you know, McDonald's would be like wholesome, valuable food that is at an efficient price, and life would be fine, right? And I think I have a problem with quinoa. The reality is that we would never be inspired. The masculine is about doing. The feminine is about envisioning and creating and debating and sensing and feeling. And, you know, we've never had the vision, I think, which is quite something. But how do we tell women that it's safe to not follow that feminism advice?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I would say, you don't tell them, you show them.
Perfect answer.
Right. Because it's, again, you know, women, we don't want to be told anything, really. I think there was a point in the conversation that we didn't get completed, and this is a perfect place to reinsert that. But you had asked, you know, how does Warren show his leadership qualities without me feeling like I'm smothered or being controlled? And I would say, you know, he is a stand for what he believes in. And he's not apologetic about it. But it has nothing to do with controlling me or manipulating my behavior so that he can feel that way. He just is that way. And it doesn't really matter, you know, who's going to challenge him on that. He is very clear on who he is in the world, what he's a stand for, and what he's willing to fight for.
Isn't that stubborn?
I would say it's a quality of stubbornness, for sure. Yeah.
And so not everyone would welcome that, don't you think?
Well, not in our culture. In fact, I would say that's he would be canceled very quickly if he was.
I would be too.
Have you been canceled before or tried to be canceled?
No, I am too empathetic to upset anyone, I hope. I mean, so if anyone is ever upset by something I said, by the way, you understood it wrong, because I honestly, in my heart, through my journey in life, I've been wrong so many times that I totally and truly respect that. Yeah, I will take a stand for what I believe in, but I will also I'll also openly say, and there is like a 90% chance I'm wrong. I believe in it strongly, so please respect my conviction, okay? And I would not open my mouth unless I believe in it strongly. But that doesn't mean I'm smart enough to know that it's right. It's just my belief and conviction.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would say in our relationship, everybody kind of knows Warren as having a little bit of a stubborn streak. That is definitely true. which has served him in many ways. And sometimes he gets in his own way in that regard. But I think when a man commits to a woman, especially in the, like the cultural climate that we are in, like cancel culture, for example, I think when a man has a strong sense of virtue and morality strong sense of what's right and what's wrong, and he's willing to be a stand for that and to protect her and to devote that quality of virtue that he has to showing up for her in that way, it really triggers something primal in women that like, oh gosh, think like, okay, there's, and again, it's a very primal thing. It's not something that is often, you know, registered consciously. It's like for me before feeling that, I didn't know I wanted kids. And then like, I suddenly felt safe to, I was like, oh, this is the path that children could be a potentiality. I feel that now.
You know why, Juliana? It's because intention matters more than action. So it's quite interesting that we sort of can judge someone by what they do or what they say, but we rarely ever allow ourselves to ask ourselves, why are they doing it or why are they saying it? And so I think a woman's instinctive sensuality, and by sensuality, I mean the ability to sense everything. The feminine's sensuality is able to detect that even though he might be doing something stupid, he's doing it from the right place, right? He's mm-hmm. doing it because he strongly believes that this is the best thing for me. He strongly believes. And I have to say, in my relationships, one of the most beautiful comments I have ever received in my life was a lovely, lovely, wonderful woman I had in my life that told me, your control sometimes is my freedom. And it is quite interesting. I'm not very controlling, but when I am very controlling. So you know, I tend to allow someone to be totally free. But then when I feel that this is very dangerous or really immoral or whatever, there are certain boundaries in my life. I will take a very strong stand and I will put my foot down, like your situation with Warren, for example. And I think it's that feeling that I'm not doing this to control you. It's not that my ego is trying to just tie you to a wall somewhere and say, don't go anywhere, you're mine. It's that I have a masculine duty to take charge of certain things. And the only way for that masculine duty to manifest really is for me to be able to take decisions. And sometimes those decisions may not be what you like, but I'm carrying the quota. So I'm going to make the decision.
Yeah. And well, I think a lot of women will be very, very trusting and willing for you to take that leadership if you also listen to her, right? It doesn't mean that you have to take her, like that you're making your decisions based off what she tells you. But again, women, when they feel seen and loved and connected, they are so much more open to let you lead because that's really what they need. Women don't necessarily, like women can solve many of their own problems, but one problem that they can't solve on their own is to be listened to for their emotions, right? When they feel heard and seen and in communicating about their inner landscape and the things that matter to them, that is one of their biggest problems, is that they really want to be seen and felt and loved for all of that inner complexity. And when she feels that, it's like, oh, there's like, you just solved 1,000 problems just in listening. And so I think to your point, there's this maybe false cultural understanding that in modern day, that leadership means like, I'm going to do, this is what we're doing and you don't have a say in it. It's like, absolutely not. It's
absolutely not.
You know, when a woman feels loved and seen, she's going to trust you. And there's even going to be some wiggle room for you to fuck it up too. You don't have to be perfect. Right. But especially if she's able to meet most of her primary needs on her own, and then you are happy to provide and to give to her and to listen to her, she will be so appreciative of your leadership and, you know, respect the choices that you make because she admires you, because you make her feel safe, right? In how you navigate the world. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
About testing, Julianne. I love that bit because Again, with age, I've learned to really enjoy it. But as a younger man, and I think most men, most of my friends will struggle with the idea of a woman will first say, do you love me? And then you'll say, yes, I love you. Then she'll say, do you love me again? And then you'll say, yes, I really love you. And then she'll say, and if I kicked you, will you love me? Right? And then you would say, yeah, I would love you even if you kicked me. So she would kick you. And then, you know, you would ask her, do you still love me? And the testing never ends. Like if we traveled through space 600 years and fell on Mars and there was very little oxygen left and, you know, I needed a kiss, would you still kiss me? Okay. For men, that's actually quite confusing. Like I just said 2 minutes ago that I love you and I brought you flowers on the way in and I told you that I missed you in the morning. What's happening there?
Mm. So in the same way that men's secret fear is that they are inadequate, mm-hmm. and therefore they love to hear that the things that they do are appreciated, women's secret fear is that she is actually unlovable or she's unworthy of love. And this is it's a weird thing that just exists for men and women.
Okay, I'm going to make a statement here for all the women listening. Oh my God, you're so lovable. Honestly, like you're so lovable. You're such an amazing creature. As a matter of fact, I think the problem with men is that all of you are lovable. That's why men struggle. You're so lovable. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a good point because I think men are, especially the men in our lives, right? The men that choose to love us and commit to us are just truly flabbergasted that we would ever have that sense of being unworthy of love. So men never think to affirm that, right? But it's something that never, it's like a fear. It's even biological. I'm not sure. But because For sure. that exists in women, they're always looking to reassure, like they're always looking for reassurance of that, right? I was reading somewhere the other day, it just makes me laugh, about how, you know, the women, like, oh, I just want you to tell me that you love me. And the husband's thinking, well, I told you I loved you on our wedding day. Why do I have to say
Yeah. And that's the way changed. I'll update you in case of any change.
Yeah, if I don't love you anymore, I'll let you know. Yeah, but it's still true. Yeah. But women, it's like a soothing balm to them that they, not only do they need it, but they want it often, right? And it really helps them continue to show up in that vulnerability and that tenderness and that softness of like, okay, if I reveal this, if I trust you at this level, if I let you into my world at this level, if I show you my vulnerability here, do you still love me? Is this still, and that probably never will never stop. But I think women can get much better and maybe have more grace in the ways that they ask, right? In the ways that they, because too much testing becomes, you know, you're walking on eggshells, right? And then for men, of course, too much of that and they feel disrespected because they're like, do you not trust me? I mean, I'm showing up for you. I'm here with you. I show you I love you in many different ways throughout the day. Like, how come that's not enough, right? And they can feel disrespected in that way. So the ways in which a woman can ask for reassurance make a big difference to, you know, how basically translating that need to her masculine partner of like, this isn't actually about you. This is just something that I will continue to probably desire. And also I'm so grateful when I get it from you. Because I think something that you had said, you know, letting the women know that they're so lovable, and they are. And I think it's valuable for the men to know that in most committed relationships, the men are the heroes, right? Like the women put so much faith and trust, and they, like, the men can truly save the day. And women know that they can. They know that how their man shows up just can truly change her world. And she knows this and she believes this, which is also why I think women can be a little bit too critical, because they don't realize that their men don't know that. The men don't know that you really truly trust that they actually, if they wanted to, they could do all of the things that you want them to do perfectly. Women believe that. Women believe like my man can do it all. He can show up perfectly because he's that great, but he's just choosing not to, which is so painful and untrue. Right. And so then they like, hey, how come you're not doing this? How come you're not doing this? Or when you did this, how come you didn't do it like that?
Yeah.
And they're just like,
which can be quite painful for a man, because let's talk about reframing for a second, because when you say that a woman's testing all the time or the feminine is testing all the time, one very big lesson for me was to constantly remind myself that her asking means that she wants me in her life, means that she cares, means that she's so vulnerable, that she really, really is all over me almost. That little question of, do you miss me, is literally saying, I am painfully missing you. And I think if you reframe it that way in your mind as a man, it makes a mega difference. I would say, however, also to the feminine, that remember, the needs of the masculine is to feel appreciated, that he's masculine enough, that he's able to do things for you, and to feel desired. And I think a woman could probably put a tiny bit more effort because the man will never ask. So that the opposite side, no man will ever go to his woman and say, do I not turn you on anymore? Because that in itself is emasculating, right?
Right.
So there is, even if you're tired, or even if you're not in the mood, or even if you're, you know, you're not really in that mindset right now, it might actually be very useful. Just like you constantly feel that you want to be reassured that you're loved and that you're missed and so on and so forth, to somehow reassure him and say, hey, by the way, you're such a man. I really think that you're amazing for me. I really think you're doing amazing things for me. I may be tired because of life's pressures, but I still desire you and I still want you. Or maybe even better, desire him and want him. And I think that would go a much further way. There seems to be a lot lost in translation, Julianne. And I think if you really ask me, if you drop it down to the level of most good men, most good women, I think the majority of the problems come in translation.
And I think that's probably been true since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
And because
because you guys speak really weird, honestly. I mean, no, I'm
sure. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. That popular book, and it's so true. We truly are on opposite ends of the spectrum. And although there's so much that we complete each other in so many beautiful ways, and we complement each other in so many beautiful ways, there's inherent challenges that come along with that. I mean, the way that women interact with other women and the way that men interact with other men is completely different. And so it's not uncommon and also quite understandable to approach your partner assuming that they function in the same basic ways as you do. And oftentimes that's wrong. it's really, really, we're very different. And there's a lot that gets lost in translation, and there's a lot that is miscommunicated, for sure.
You know, sometimes I use the example to explain that for the masculine to appreciate the feminine, imagine that you're constantly living in the city and then you finally get your chance to go out to nature. And for the feminine to appreciate the masculine, imagine constantly living on a farm and then suddenly coming to civilization, right? Not that one or the other is better or different, or that one is more associated. I mean, it seems to me that big cities are all about doing and process and action and so on. They don't have beauty and charm and feelings in them. So they are a little more masculine, if you want, as living environments than nature. But that neither can live without the other. You know, that in a very interesting way in our modern world, it's that beauty of like, oh my God, I so appreciate nature because I'm living in the city, or I so appreciate the convenience because, you know, and the culture and so on, because I'm always alone in nature, I think is a very interesting contrast. I don't know what to tell you other than this has been one of my favorite conversations of Slow-Mo this year, by a very large margin, actually. In an interesting way, throughout this conversation, Julianne, I was just thinking, oh man, I love how I trust my instincts. And I will invite every one of our listeners to please take your partner and listen to this again. Okay. I think that the reality of how beautifully Warren, I love you, man. I really do. I think you're such an incredible good man to get to earn the love of a wonderful woman the way that you did. And Julianne, I really, really am amazed by how open you are to your vulnerability and your femininity. It's really inspiring. It's really beautiful. And to be able to articulate it in such an open way, I really believe that a lot, at least a lot of what I would consider incredible women would benefit from being open to this, from being open to truly digging deep and celebrating that vulnerability, celebrating that. It called it wounding. I thought that was a beautiful way of describing the fragility and the delicacy, how delicate the feminine is. Beautiful, truly beautiful. I think a lot of people listening to this will want to find you. So where can they find you?
So the main place is on Instagram, which were you found me there as well. Embody by Jules, trusting your instincts.
Say this again, embody by Jules.
Mm-hmm. EmbodyByJules.
Good. And I would truly love to have you again, if you're open to the idea.
Oh, it'd be my pleasure. Yeah, this was fun. Really fun.
Yeah, I will stalk you more. I will even follow you on Instagram, believe that.
You tell
that
or not.
Yeah, I rarely ever follow anyone on Instagram, but I really think that there is such a beautiful, tender way of explaining things to you that is really needed in the world. So I'm so grateful that you had to find your trauma to be able to discover that and move forward from there.
Yeah, so there's a silver lining in everything if you look for it, for sure.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's really a privilege. It's a lot of fun.
And for all of you listening, I think this is a very interesting conversation for anyone who is not willing to be truly open to their true nature, whatever that true nature is, wherever you are. If you're just so tightly trying to stick to the middle, away from the polarity of the masculine or the feminine, maybe you should consider a different place. So maybe rewind, listen to this again. Maybe get a partner or a friend from the opposite side of the polarity to listen to it with you, and pause every now and then and think about and discuss our differences. I will agree with Julianne. I think there is nothing more beautiful than a harmonious union of the two. There is almost a superpower to being able to see the world through the eyes of the feminine when I'm, you know, masculine. And I'm guessing that if this is the way I feel, that others on the feminine side of the spectrum would feel the same way too. It's just that ability to respect and harmonize and work together to bring each other's values. I will ask you, as I have changed now to a focused, targeted person, to do help me spread this podcast. The more I get your feedback about how different it is, the more I feel that it's worthy of spreading. So rate it 5 stars on your podcast player, please. Find me on YouTube, Mo Gaudet Official. That's my channel where we also publish the podcast every week. Subscribe and click the alerts thingy, the little bell, post about it on Instagram, tell your friends about it, and help me spread it, because if you like it, I think others would like it too, and I would really appreciate your help. The idea of slowing down a little bit every week to reflect on something that is by a true human, not necessarily always a celebrity, is, I think, something that the world really needs. Doesn't matter how busy you are this week, there is always a tiny, tiny bit of time to slow down. I love you all for listening, and I will see you next time.